Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We get out of the studio and onto the road to find the kind of radio you don't hear so much anymore. Stories off the beaten path and usually away from the top headlines. By the way, be sure and drop us a note or, and this is new, send us a short audio clip telling us what's on your mind, what's going on for the summer, your favorite vacation story, that kind of thing. Just use a smartphone or a digital recorder and send the file, or just a note if you'd rather, to our email address at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Fall is a great time for festivals in Indiana, especially the community celebrations across the state where you can get away and catch some local culture. Some of the most memorable events have a uniquely Indiana flavor. Take, for example, the powwows held by the state's Native American tribes. The 54th annual Tecumseh Lodge powwow was held in Tipton last weekend. This weekend, it's the Andersontown Powwow and Indian Market on Saturday and Sunday. Two full days celebrating Native American art, music, culture, traditions, and history held on the banks of White River near the original Delaware settlement of Chief Anderson, also known as Kikawenand. Yeah, you may not have remembered that the city of Anderson is named for a Delaware Indian chief. That chief's great-great-great-grandson is Mike Pace with the Delaware Tribe of Indians in Oklahoma. He's been assistant chief and treasurer of the tribe, does numerous presentations at Connor Prairie near Indianapolis, and is one of the organizers of this week's Andersontown Powwow.
A powwow is an intertribal. That means everybody can get together. Any tribe can participate. The dance itself is a celebration of life. It's also a time where people share with each other, participate together in the dance. The dance is traditionally a gift from the Creator, and we celebrate that through our dance. We have, of course, today in powwow, it's not specifically one tribe and not specifically one type of dancer. So you see many types of dancers. There are many divisions within that. So today on the women's side, you have the women's cloth, you have the women's buckskin, you have what we call the northern shawl, and of course we also have the jingle dress. And all of those women dance in different ways, in different fashions. On the men's side, you have the southern straight dancers, you have the northern traditional dancers, and the regalia is usually pretty spectacular, and that's what people really want to see. But the people who participate in it, it is a celebration to remember their own heritage, to honor their own people who have gone on before them, and that's what the celebration is all about. And, of course, the unique part of it is the drum itself. All the songs that you hear our old traditional songs, but we actually create new songs all the time. So it's never really the same at any powwow. It always changes, and that's the fun part of coming and participating with it.
What lessons do you suppose Native Americans, past and present, have for the rest of America?
Ah, very good. Well, I think the lessons that can be learned from tribes is that as a people, when you live together and you share a common bond and a common language, the things that you learn from that is the closeness, the adherence together and living together. But the most important thing among tribal people is the fact that they lived a very practical life. They learned to live well within their environment. They were able to adjust and adapt to wherever they lived. And, of course, teaching your young folks to respect all things, and that was something that should be important today, especially when we talk about our environment today and how we're beginning to destroy some of our environment. And that's something tribes taught their young people, to respect everything. Everything has a spirit. Whether it's an animate or an inanimate object, whether it's an animal, whether it's a stone, whether it's grass, they need to be respected. And if we can do that, I think, you know, the world would be a much better place for that. And, of course, the other thing is trying to live your life in the right way. In our language, we'd say, to follow a good road. Today, it's hard. The interaction between peoples today, you know, has caused a lot of problems, and we hope that people will learn to live like a tribe. We have a common bond. We know each other. We try to get the best out of ourselves, and we try to teach the young people to get the best out of themselves. And I think that's the most important thing. Is, unfortunately, you know, even the Delaware tribe, because today we're spread out so much, we're also losing part of our culture because we are spread out so much. I'd like to see where we have more times to get together at powwows, and our traditional gatherings is a time when we can come and share that with everyone, not just our own people and not just the young people, too.
Aren't you descended from William Anderson?
Kithawenin was my great-great-great-grandfather. He was actually born in Pennsylvania, and, of course, as the tribe, part of the tribe, by 1795, we were actually living in Ohio, but the tribe ceded their lands there and moved over here to Indiana. And, of course, this area was actually Miami territory at the time because the Delaware had ceded their lands, and they were landless. And so the tribe moved over here, and a lot of the towns here, especially Anderson, Muncie, Strawtown, those towns originally started out as Delaware villages. And when the tribe left in 1821, well, settlers came in and took what was there. Chief Anderson was called the first among equals because the Delaware do not have principal chiefs like we do today. In the old days, every village had their own chief. But Chief Anderson was very well respected, and when he spoke for the tribe, they called him the first among equals. The other chiefs chose him to speak for the tribe because he was a pretty elegant and eloquent man. He was a little over 50 years old when he accepted that role, and reluctantly, too, because it is a lot of responsibility. But he has a very great history, and, of course, all of his children went on to do many different things in history, the American history. And so we're proud to come up here and celebrate with the local people and, of course, to relate the story of Kithawenin.
That is Mike Pace, former assistant chief of the Delaware Tribe of Indians. He is in Anderson this week for the Andersontown Powwow on Saturday and Sunday. Details at andersontownpowwow.org. Some of our music today is from previous powwows. We have links to that material, along with the website for this weekend's event, at our Facebook page.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook. And drop us a line to let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
Among the festivals this fall season in Indiana are gatherings sponsored by Native American groups, powwows that everyone is welcome to and feature dancing, food, and cultural displays, among other things. This weekend, it's the Andersontown Powwow and Indian Market on Saturday and Sunday along White River near 8th Street and Indiana 9. Native American performers will include storytellers, dancers, and singers. They'll have authentic handmade Native American art, paintings, jewelry, and other cultural items. More details are at andersontownpowwow.org. Among those who will be there is Dr. Jim Brown, a former professor and associate dean of journalism at Indiana University. He is co-editor of the book Long Journey Home, Oral Histories of Contemporary Delaware Indians. By the way, think of all the Indiana place names. Delaware County, Miami County, named for tribes. The communities like Muncie and Anderson, originally settled by Indians. It turns out, though, that many of us don't know much about that heritage.
No, we don't. And the Andersontown Powwow is a really good place to learn some of that heritage. It's now in its 10th year, and the arena chairman and the MC of the powwow are actually direct descendants of Chief Anderson, whose Indian name was Kithawenin. The town of Anderson was named after Chief Anderson. And they come up from Oklahoma, Bartlesville, Oklahoma, to work as officials with the Andersontown Powwow. They also give heritage lessons in a tent there. They actually give a program so people can learn about the Delaware history of Indiana by going to the Andersontown powwow. They're going to encounter a typical powwow, which includes dances. There is a number of vendors there, that many of whom are Native American, Indian artists. There is a camp set up there with a bark hut, cooking things that the Delawares would have cooked historically. Delawares or other woodland tribes come from the East Coast. They come from New Jersey, what is now New Jersey, New York. They didn't live in teepees. So the usual image of an Indian by people who don't know much about them is they live in teepees. Well, not all of them did. They lived in bark huts. All the woodland tribes did.
Your interest in this stemmed from your background with the Boy Scouts of America.
That's right. When I became a Boy Scout when I was 11 years old, that's quite a long time ago now. I still work, by the way, with the Boy Scouts teaching visual storytelling workshops. But when I was a youth, I was elected and was inducted into the Order of the Arrow, an honorary camping society of the Boy Scouts. And the ceremonies for Order of the Arrow and scouting include Delaware language. They were modeled loosely after Delaware culture. Delawares were known as the grandfather tribe out east. At one point, they were pretty well decimated by disease. Their tribal numbers were down. And, you know, if you don't have a lot of warriors, you learn to negotiate. And so they became known as really good peacemakers, and they could mitigate problems between neighboring tribes, and as such, they were called the grandfather tribe.
There are so many points of contact with Native Americans and Indiana history. Do you ever think about that?
There are some. Of course, the Indians, when they were in big populations in Indiana, a good many of them lived along the White River, because you need water as a culture. So there are lots of towns up and down the White River that at one time had an Indian culture. And I was wandering south of Whitestown one time on my motorcycle and found a historic marker of a Delaware graveyard there. So you happen on to them, they're just not widely publicized.
You've written a book about this. You've written a book of the oral history of the Delaware people. What did you learn in the course of talking to all those folks?
What I learned basically is an incredible dedication to the preservation of history. They almost lost their culture by policies of our federal government, by their parents who at some point around the turn of the early 1900s, late 1800s, thought, well, it's a white man's world, let's just learn to get along and forget the Indian ways. So some of the people who are elders now were not really taught culture as it had historically been passed along. But they set out to recapture it, and they've done a marvelous job. And they did it by studying artifacts in museums, because as Native Americans, they can handle artifacts, they can touch them. We couldn't if we went into the museum. We could look at them, but we couldn't touch them. They could, and so they could see how the ribbon work was put together. They could see how the moccasins were made. They found archives of dance notations by folklorists. Some of these important records were actually done at Indiana University back in the day. There were recordings of Native speakers singing songs, which they learned. They set out to study and recapture their culture, and they did. And the story of that struggle is essentially what we captured in Long Journey Home, a book published by IU Press.
What does Long Journey Home refer to?
Rita Kahn, the co-editor of that book, and I got the idea from the Delaware Indians in Oklahoma come back every year to Conner Prairie in Noblesville, between Indianapolis, Fishers and Noblesville. And they give a program for school children. And they love doing that. They love telling the children about the Indian culture of the older Indiana. And so they're coming back from Oklahoma to Indiana. That's where we got the name. They're back in the woodlands, essentially. And Oklahoma has some trees, but not nearly as many trees as we do.
Dr. Jim Brown, a former professor and associate dean of journalism at Indiana University. He's co-editor of the book Long Journey Home, Oral Histories of Contemporary Delaware Indians. We're talking today about the state's remarkable, story-filled history of Native American culture and the present-day chance to see some of that in the powwows that are held.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
They are some of Indiana's most colorful events on the annual calendar, the powwows or celebrations of Native American tribes. Tipton was the setting last weekend for the Tecumseh Lodge powwow. This weekend, the Dancing Saturday and Sunday is at the Andersontown powwow and Indian Market. You can find a link with more details at our Facebook page. Jim Brown is a retired journalism professor and associate dean of Indiana University Journalism who has studied the Delaware Indians. Our own Delaware County owes them its name, but of course the history of Native Americans in this country is much more complex than that.
There were obviously a number of broken treaties. The Delawares had a treaty with William Penn in Pennsylvania. Penn's sons broke the treaty. There was a huge massacre of Delawares, Christian Delawares, in Ohio, now known as the Gnadenhutten Massacre. And the Indians that were in Indiana at the time invited the Delawares to come on and live here. But by official government action, they kept on being pushed further west, out of Indiana. The Conner Prairie reenactment settlement is circa 1836. The Delawares were gone by 1836 out of Indiana. They were into Missouri and then finally into Kansas. Then their final removal was to Oklahoma. And they weren't really given their own territory. They were told to be part of the Cherokee Nation. Well, this is like telling a Frenchman to be a German. It just makes no sense. And so whatever money was due to the tribe was given to the Cherokees, and the Delawares had to go hat in hand to the Cherokees to get their federal money. To this day, there's acrimony between the Delaware tribe of eastern Oklahoma and the Cherokees who live there. Sometimes you'll see one of these signs when you go into Oklahoma from Kansas, you'll see a sign that says entering Cherokee territory. At one point, I made a picture of that sign that had been crossed out and Delaware had been written in.
What would you say is the reaction of the different kinds of reactions that you get to this work and that the Indians get to the celebration of their culture?
Well, you know, a lot's changed over the past 3 or 4 decades. At one time, for example, Annette Ketchum's college friends encouraged her to pass, as they called it, because she had skin that was light enough she could pass as Anglo. And her friends suggested that she pass. And she thought, well, why would I want to do that? I'm Indian. But at one time, you know, in the early 1900s, it wasn't so popular to be Indian. In fact, General Sherman was credited with the quote, may or may not be accurate, but certainly the attitude was accurate, that the only good Indian is a dead Indian. And a lot of people thought that. But now, it's very popular to be Indian. These Delawares are invited guests to the Andersontown powwow and other places, including Europe. Europe has a big interest in American Indian culture, and some of my Delaware friends have been invited to go be speakers at meetings in Europe. So now it's kind of popular to be Indian. The problem is there's some wannabes. Some Anglos who want to be Indians, and that also is an interesting problem to have.
How's that come about? I mean, are there people walking around and claiming to be members?
Well, sure, because it's kind of cool to be Indian. You get to do all that bead work and those nice dances and so forth, and if you have one 452nd quantum blood, you think you're Indian. But you may have discovered that very late in life and you didn't grow up Indian like these people did. You didn't grow up speaking the language and so forth. So I'm sure there are a lot of pretenders out there. And of course, one of the misconceptions is looking Indian. There's been, like every culture, there's been a lot of intermarriage across the years, and so you can have a pretty good quantum of blood and still not, quote, look Indian.
What about somebody who's from this area, Anderson, Muncie, or, you know, and their family goes way back and they think that maybe they are? Maybe there's a family story or something like that. How do they check that out?
Well, I have overheard conversations in which some people have asked that very question to, for example, to Chief Ketchum. And he puts them in touch with some tribal resources to help them check that out. One person who is now a retired art professor from the University of Georgia thought in his family history that he might have some Delaware blood. And he actually had a genetic test, which is now possible. You can have your DNA tested.
Mitochondrial, yes. You know, on the mother's side thing.
Well, there's that, but there's also various DNA tests. And one of them can give you a proportion of different ethnic origins in your blood. And he found out that he did have a percentage Indian blood. He also found out he had a percentage of African American blood, and he does not have any of these features. He has, you know, he looks like a typical Caucasian. But having found that out and knowing it, essentially scientifically knowing it, by a combination of family lore and a DNA test, the Delawares, one of his close friends is Mike Pace, and Mike Pace helped dress him out and taught him the dances, and now he goes to the main Delaware powwow near Copan, Oklahoma, and every year and dances as an Indian. So he is one that really studied his family history and adopted the Indian part of it.
Jim Brown, IU Journalism Professor Emeritus, talking about the culture of the Delaware Indians. The tribe is celebrating this weekend in Anderson, a city you may know named for the great Delaware chief William Anderson. For some, it's hard to face the history of Native Americans and their treatment here. For their part, the Delaware at their Andersontown powwow aren't looking back, but have an eye on the present and in sharing personal stories of a culture that thrived here and gave us some of the names and places we now take for granted. Well, that's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Marcus Jackman. Glad you could join us this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio, I'm John Strauss.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss of the Ball State Journalism Department. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Marcus Jackman. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from Dillman's Furniture, Muncie, serving East Central Indiana with home furnishings from Flex Steel, Bassett, and Simmons Beautyrest. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.